Hi, welcome to another edition of the PCRF podcast. My name is Dave Page. I'm a paramedic instructor at Inver Hills Community College, and I'm here with
Josh Salzman, director of the Critical Care Research Center at Regents Hospital in St. Paul.
Marshall Washick, paramedic with Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And Dr. Keith Wesley, I'm the medical director here at Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul.
Well, we have a doozy here for you. It's going to be fun to talk about this one. It is a research paper by Dr. Poston, P-O-S-T-O-N. I hope I'm not butchering his name at all. The prevalence of overweight, obesity, and substandard fitness in a population-based firefighter cohort. And this came out of the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine in March 2011. And I think it is just a phenomenal study. They basically randomized a group of randomly selected a group of fire departments in the Missouri Valley. They're part of the International Association of Fire Chiefs Missouri Valley area. And then did a yeoman's job of contacting those organizations to get in there and interact with some of the firefighters that work for those departments. They were fairly successful. There's a little bit of selection bias, but they were fairly successful at getting into those departments, and they categorized them as volunteer or career. So there's always the bias from folks that look at these things that say, well, if I'm a paid career professional firefighter, then I'm on the clock, and those folks are fit because they can work out on duty. The volunteers say we're just as professional as the career folks. There's the ongoing debate. So this paper basically tried to equalize that and say, we're not going to get into this debate. We'll just report the facts. The other thing that they did a pretty good job of, because of previous studies on, they used body mass index to see if people were overweight or obese. And they did a pretty nice job of saying, well, in the past, people have knocked the BMI because if you've got a lot of muscle, then sometimes the BMI gets thrown off. So they weren't going to leave anything, any stone unturned, and they did body fat percent. They also checked for waist circumference and did cardiovascular risks like pulse or blood pressure, cholesterol, and a self-report of physical activity questionnaire screening tool that has been previously validated. So all of these tools had been previously validated in other studies, so they didn't have to go and say, you know what, this self-reported physical activity scale we just invented, it had been proven and correlated in a previous study. Now, for their results, they're pretty scary, actually. They report, of course, that we sort of envision firefighters and in general emergency services people to be physically fit people. They ended up with 677 career and volunteer male firefighters. They had to filter out. They only had a dozen or more females in this bunch. So what does that tell us about the, you know, status of employment for females as firefighters in the Missouri Valley? But in any case, the results are all male, and the populations are interesting to look at in terms of whether or not career folks were older, younger, had more experience, etc. I would encourage you to go in and take a look at some of those numbers just because it's just interesting. And they compared them to the 2008 U.S. Census population estimates for who was obese and who was not. And it's interesting. We, as a group, we, meaning the EMS, firefighting EMS community, have a greater rate of being overweight, and about the similar rate of being obese than the U.S. public. and correct me if I'm wrong, because there's a lot of numbers in here that were really interesting, and I don't want to misreport something. They did only use departments that had 20 people or more, and they had 13 departments that were enrolled, that 17 of them were not reachable out of the first randomized part of the volunteer group. The volunteer group was hard to reach, and they report that as a limitation. They concluded that it's about time that we maybe do something to increase the awareness and programs that will increase fitness. And I think that's a great conclusion. Even more interesting was this measurement. It's a post-cardiac event exercise tolerance measurement to see if firefighters are ready to return to work after they've suffered from a cardiac event. And you need to achieve this 12 METs. That more than 80, and I'm quoting now, more than 80% and 95% of these obese career and volunteer firefighters did not meet that standard, regardless of whether they'd already had a cardiac event or not. They couldn't maintain or they couldn't achieve that 12 METs standard. And it's a metabolic energy. I'll find it here in a second. The METs abbreviation. So, with that, I'll open it up to discussion.
Well, Dave, I think you did a nice job summarizing the results, certainly. And as the research nerd here, I really do commend the group again for spending a lot of time and effort around the actual design of the study and doing it in a way that helps put to rest some of the questions that, like you mentioned, Dave, that people constantly bring up about the use of BMI and how valid and reliable it actually is for defining populations. I think as my personal background with a master's degree in exercise physiology, this was a nice study to look at. And really, I think one of the most interesting aspects of it that I think as you read this paper, readers, is to look at the false negative rate, where you actually had people who were not considered obese according to the BMI, but actually were obese using some more more validated tools that are used pretty commonly in the exercise physiology world. So, you know, we get this, one of the things that they reference in the discussion is the skinny fat phenomenon, where you may not necessarily be, you may not look overweight, but you have excess fat on your body. And so it was just interesting that they captured that and were able to characterize how often that happens. But you know, we really do rely on our EMS and fire folks to be able to have the physical capacity and capability to go into situations where they're going to be asked to exert themselves, and to know that it's important for people to take note and to pay attention to it. It also dovetails nicely with, I think, the study that was released in JAMA, I want to say about 2 or 3 years ago, that looked at sudden cardiac death in firefighters and how that was so much higher than the general population as well. This information just ties into that nicely and validates that.
Yeah, and they reference the disproportionate number of line of duty deaths due to cardiovascular disease. And I thought that was a nice tie-in as well. And for anyone out there who's EMS, who's a non-fire EMS, thinking, well, we're immune, take a look at John Studnick's work with the LEADS project and the National Registry, and their survey data in 2009, I believe, published in Pre-Hospital Emergency Care, showed some alarming numbers of EMS providers who basically met that same proportion of being either overweight or obese. So if you're thinking what qualifies and what doesn't, and you haven't yet looked at this paper, BMI of greater than 25 was overweight, and a BMI of greater than 30 was obese. I was also just tickled by the fact that you know, the BMI that always gets blamed for, oh man, the BMI told me I was obese. Oh man. But you know, I've got great muscle. That was more generous and less likely. And I also like that they actually went and measured these people. And in Studnick's paper, the LEADS project really asked for self-reported data, which is useful and clearly matches up with this study pretty well. However, it still leaves it open for, you know, I don't think I'm that overweight. And it kind of, you know, it's self-reported instead of actually going and having people stand on a scale and measure their waists. And if your waist was greater than 40, watch out. You're in the obese category. So,
and that's belly button metric. That's not actually hip. So they measure circle from your belly button all the way around, which, you know, we can all have 34-inch waist, but really have a 40-inch waist when it comes to the true measurement. So I think that's also important to recognize.
Well, I agree. I found this study very interesting. And, for the readers who don't get a chance to look at this, we've been referring to the Missouri Valley region, which is actually a region of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. Now, when I first read that, I was thinking, okay, Ohio, Missouri, Louisiana. Well, actually, it's Colorado, mm-hmm. Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Wyoming. Now, there's about six western states I would have never, in my mind, thought that that's the part of the Missouri Valley region. So what's interesting is if you go to the CDC's website and pull up the 2008 data on obesity, the majority of those states, the obesity, a BMI greater than 30, is only about 20% of their state population. So while across the board, as far as the United States as a whole, our average obesity is 30% of the population, these firefighters were significantly more likely to be obese than their state cohorts.
Counterparts, yeah.
Colorado actually has the lowest obesity rate in the nation at about 12%. And so if you actually look at this, then that means that these firefighters in these states were significantly more obese than their fellow citizens. It would be interesting if they looked at another region where, and let's go to the fat belt of America, and let's go down to Arkansas and Tennessee.
I can see the letters coming.
You just go to the CDC website and
there's
you look at the states that have a 30
that.
Plus that are in the 30 plus percent of the population that are registered as obese, and that is the Grease Belt. It's Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Missouri, and then of course Alaska. Sorry, Eskimos, but that's where the obesity rates are. So, and then look at the next category, and that's diabetes. They're in the same area. Obesity and diabetes go together. And that's very much what they found. They didn't look a lot at diabetes as much as they looked at cardiovascular disease, and had the firefighters that were overweight and obese were also significantly more likely to have elevated triglycerides, elevated cholesterol. And then this concept of their cardiovascular fitness, as far as their ability to do the 15 METs, and I can't remember what
12,
that stands for.
12 METs. Metabolic
equivalents.
Of aerobic.
If you actually look at their limitations, that test is not designed to test the physical fitness of firefighters, but of sedentary occupational workers.
Oh, interesting.
Which clearly is not an apples to apples, but these firefighters who certainly engage in significantly strenuous activity, 80% of them couldn't pass the cardiovascular fitness required of a sedentary occupational worker. Mm-hmm. So, all right, here's my soapbox. The fire service passed through the heart and lung bill to provide them the death of a firefighter from cardiovascular disease is considered an on-the-job event. Line of duty death. And they are afforded taxpayer-paid, subsidized disability and life benefits. Got no problem with that, because most of the services now have no smoking policies and require a tobacco-free workforce. But Why should we as taxpayers pay for the disability of overweight and obese firefighters who don't change their lifestyles and then die of a cardiovascular event?
Okay, this is not a political show. This is not a Dr. Wesley.
I hear that.
These are Dr. Wesley's opinions.
But the people who write this don't represent the PCRF. But when we talk about what's the implications, we have to draw what's the implications of the study. Are we expecting that that by just simply saying, you know what, all you firefighters, a significant number of you are overweight and obese and out of shape? Well, their answer is duh, and so they're not going to do anything about it. But the people who write the policies and the people who fund the programs, they're the ones that are going to look at papers like this and go, you know what, you better get yourself together. You better, because this is part of healthcare reform now, is if you want lower premiums, if you want better healthcare coverage, then you better get in shape.
We should commend those departments that do have physical activity requirements where they do yearly testing to make sure that their providers are able to meet some of those minimum standards, although probably not as prevalent across the country as we'd hope they are. There are some places that really take that to heart and make that a standard, and even broadening that out into EMS is that how does that apply into the world of EMS providers, where you're obviously very active, you're obviously asked to do physically strenuous work, and there is a reasonableness in saying that those types of encouraging healthy behavior should be extended into those areas as well.
I'm actually amazed.
Yeah, see, Josh just said more politically correct.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
I
said.
I think what would be interesting is perhaps we invite someone from the International Association of Fire Chiefs to join us next time to discuss how they're, because they clearly were part of the sponsoring of this study.
Yeah.
They didn't just say, let's just do this for fun.
Yeah.
What's their take on it?
I would suspect that they'd have a lot to say, as well as the IAFF would have something to say. And I do think the generalizability of this to EMS is extremely applicable. The 12 METS measurement of minimal fitness, I would love to actually do a test to see if, in fact, lifting a stretcher requires you to have 12 METs or not, and again, what's it like to do CPR for two minutes at a time, or any number of the activities that we have to do on the floor or in the ambulance. I want to just point out some interesting numbers that struck me. I don't know how to reconcile them in my head, but in career versus volunteer, there was some age differences, but in particular, the difference between sort of the 12 to 16 year career, it seems like we go from a mean age of 36 to 41, and that in that age bracket, maybe it's our metabolism that slows down. But there was a definite change in who was obese versus who was not, and who was overweight versus who was not. So it's possible that right at the cusp of that veteran firefighter who's been around the department for 5-10 years, you begin to sort of slow the metabolism, increase the intake, decrease the fitness standard, and it's those that really tip the scale, it seems like. So I found that to be very interesting, whether you were a career firefighter or a volunteer. If you're sort of settling into your career, now's the time to kind of wonder, maybe I need to change my habits.
I think even for the general public, knowing that, the perception is that there's a fire every second, and I think in reality that we know that there isn't. We also know that with fire prevention, a lot of that, those daily activity for real life fires where those types of strenuous activities are required has gone down, I would venture to say, significantly in the last 10 years. So whether that should be a good thing or should be seen as a good thing or a bad thing in relation to BMI is a totally different question.
I thought one of the really interesting, you look at some of the demographics of the, again, that career versus volunteer, when you look at incidence of hypertension in the career firefighter who was obese, they were 4.4 times more likely to have hypertension and be on medications for it. The volunteer firefighter was 12.8 times more likely, which, you know, looks at the disparity probably to some degree of healthcare coverage for volunteer services versus career services. The volunteer, you're inheriting his health and wellness from his job, from his the job pays his bills, not from the from volunteer fire department. So, you know, I think if anything, if you're a city manager, you've got to start thinking, what am I going to do for my volunteer firefighters? They're potentially much more sicker. What's that going to cost us to maintain their health if they have a line of duty death or disability?
Yeah. Excellent. And to be fair, also, we didn't mention this, but this is not firefighter only. These are many of them were, I think at least 16% were firefighter paramedics. And the authors did describe EMS duties that these fire departments perform. So how many of them are ambulance service and fire? This is not just a matter of fire suppression. It's also emergency medical care. Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks for tuning in again to another PCRF podcast.